KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier, Saturday, February 6th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Warrior tells the true story of Leonard Peltier, the American Indian leader locked away for life in Leavenworth Penitentiary. Warrior takes us back to the violent confrontations at Pine Ridge and Wounded Knee in the 70s, and through Peltier's harrowing odyssey through the American justice system. Leonard's son, Chauncey Peltier, will hold a Q&A after the film. Again, that's Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier, Saturday, February 6th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of When Money Talks, The High Price of Free Speech and the Selling of Democracy, a talk by author Derek Cressman on Friday, February 2nd, 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Cressman will discuss how courts have foiled attempts to limit campaign spending, what a constitutional amendment limiting paid speech could say, and much more. Again, that's When Money Talks, The High Price of Free Speech and the Selling of Democracy, a talk by author Derek Cressman on Friday, February 2nd, 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. This is KBOO Portland. It's 9:01 a.m. Coming up on Political Perspectives, host Per Fogering speaks with David Barsamian at Alternative Radio about the challenges in getting and keeping AR on the airwaves. They also discuss current world issues. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, followed at 10:15 by Flashpoints. At 11, award-winning poet Patricia Smith talks about her life and work and reads some of her poems. And at 11:30 on the Radio Zine, host Ken Jones talks with Hari Kondabolu, who the New York Times calls one of the most exciting political comics in stand-up today. And thanks, KBOO listeners, for your generous support. And if you're not a KBOO member, you can remedy that oversight at kboo.fm. Just click where it says Donate Today.
Well, good morning. Show is Political Perspectives, and my name is Per Fogering. And before we get to our guest, I have one brief announcement. The Portland Folk Music Society is having their annual Sing Time Frolics. And this year, the focus will be on Ireland because it is the 100th anniversary of the Easter Rising. So that should be really good for Irish Freedom fans, and the guest, special guest artist, we Colleen Rainey. And so this festival is held at Manuka up in the Columbia Gorge. And to find out more about it and register, you can go online, portlandfolkmusic.org. It's one way to celebrate the 100th year of the Easter Rising. Now our guest is somebody who really needs no introduction because you hear him every Tuesday on KBOO. It's David Barsamian of Alternative Radio. And David, are you there?
Indeed I am. Good morning. It's wonderful to be on KBOO, and greetings to all KBOO listeners and supporters and members all across the state.
Oh, you bet. Well, across the state. Now, Alternative Radio, this is speaking of anniversaries, this is the 30th anniversary of Alternative Radio, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I started in 86 here in...
You were just a little kid then, I guess, huh?
Pardon?
You were just a little kid then, right?
Oh, not quite. I'm a pretty late bloomer, actually. I didn't get into radio until I was, after I gave up my career as a sitar player. That didn't quite work out. I sort of morphed into radio.
Really?
But, yeah, 30 years of progressive voices, information, news, perspectives that, you know, you don't hear in the corporate-controlled media. And, yes, we're, you know, celebrating that, but... You know, we've had some setbacks recently. KLCC, the Lane Community College station in Eugene, summarily dropped the program a couple of weeks ago. And people are organizing around that, trying to get it restored, because there seems to be a number of programs from NPR, like Wait, Wait, which is a game show, Radio Lab, TED Hour, mm-hmm. which are repeated. So there's, you know, they have room on their broadcast schedule if they so choose.
Well, isn't there? There is a, isn't there another NPR station in Eugene?
No, there isn't.
I thought there was a KOPB. AM or something
sure
like
OPB
that.
OPB reaches Eugene.
Well, no, there's OPB FM here in Portland.
Yeah.
And then I think there's OPB AM in Eugene or Corvallis or something.
KOAC out of Corvallis, actually.
And then there's that too. I mean,
yeah, the AM station.
Mm-hmm.
But we're asking people, if they're interested, to sign a petition. Go to change.org and just type KLCC in the search bar. So go to change.org and type KLCC in the search bar, and you could see what the issues are. And if you could add your name, that would be great.
Well, you know, it's funny. The very last time I heard Michael Parenti on OPB was years ago, but it was when OPB used to have your show.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's been mirrored across the country, where these major NPR stations have, you know, dropped alternative radio and really have marginalized all dissident voices. So there's nowhere to hear Chomsky or Angela Davis, or, as you mentioned, Michael Parenti, Bob McChesney, all of the Vandana Shiva, Arundhati Roy, all these great voices that AR has been identified with for many, many years. Tariq Ali is another one.
I was just thinking of Robert Perry, who has been on this, on my other show, several times. He's been on your show, hasn't he?
Yes, indeed. I mean, if you go to the website alternativeradio.org, I mean, you'll find a massive archive.
I know, about 500 speakers or more.
More than that, yeah. Progressive voices that, you know, are simply marginalized. But as I was saying, what's happened at KOPB has been replicated, you know, around the country, and KLCC in Eugene, that there's a movement toward timidity, not to rock the boat, not to be controversial, to present a range of opinion from A to B rather than A to Z. So you really don't get the kind of information you really need to unpack the layers of propaganda that is just being generated. Just to give you an example, I heard an appalling interview on Morning Edition today with Steve Inskeep. He's their morning anchor with Renee Montaigne. He was interviewing Ashton Carter.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah, go tell
US
us about
Secretary
it.
Secretary of Defense. Mm-hmm. What an opportunity to ask some really hard questions. But what did Inskeep do? It was softball after softball after softball. There wasn't a single question dealing with international law, not a single question dealing with the fact that U.S. intervention in the Middle East has made ISIS possible. And U.S. allies in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia, like Turkey, have also been enablers of ISIS. What an opportunity for Inskeep to ask those questions, but it was, you know, it was just kind of perfunctory.
Well, why did they? Well, we sort of know what they're doing. I've been listening. You know, I listen to NPR. It's interesting that there seems to be quite a difference, at least here in Portland, between the OPB, the local news station and NPR. I mean, in fact, actually, I thought OPB has done a pretty decent job of reporting on this, this militia standoff in Harney County. But when it comes to NPR, I don't know, they're in the grip of the Washington consensus.
Yeah, and, you know, this is unfortunate because the founding document of public broadcasting, the Carnegie Commission report, this goes back to the mid-1960s, and then the passage of the Public Broadcasting Act in 1967, incidentally, was the last piece of Great Society legislation that Lyndon Johnson was able to pass before his whole, you know, his whole program went up in the flames of Indochina and the wars there. So the founding document says clearly that this should be the United States should have a non-commercial public broadcasting system, radio and TV. That doesn't mean what they now call underwriting or enhanced underwriting and, ads, full-blown ads from ExxonMobil and Chevron and BP and, upscale car companies that you see on TV, on PBS, or you hear on NPR. The other thing that is in violation of that, Public Broadcasting Act, is that it clearly states that public radio and public TV should be a forum for controversy and debate and should provide a voice for those who might otherwise be unheard. That's almost an exact quote from the enabling legislation. Well, you can see how far NPR and PBS have moved to the right over these ensuing decades, where there's very little dissident opinion. What dissident opinion there is, that is to say, opinion that challenges hegemonic thinking. Like, for example, the United States is a force for good in the world, that it is altruistic, that it's trying to help other countries, that it is, it cares about human rights. Well, if the United States cares about human rights, the three of its closest allies, four of them, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and are creating massive human rights violations. Pakistan is as well.
Well, it's very interesting. You talk about dissonant voices. I remember on NPR, they used to have this show, Talk of the Nation, and I think Conan...
Noah Adams.
Noah Adams was the first host. And Neil Conan was a host.
Yeah.
And every now and then he'd have Chris Hedges on. My suspicion is that they were buddies or something from war correspondent days. But so every now and then you hear Chris Hedges on Talk of the Nation, but it'd be usually a very brief little talk. He wouldn't really go into his usual stuff, But then
that was back when Hedges was still considered part of the establishment. I mean, he was a correspondent for the New York Times, our most prestigious newspaper, but he hasn't been on NPR in ages.
I know.
We had him on 10 times, for example. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably our most popular speaker.
Well, Talk of the Nation was that was taken off the air about 5 or 6 years ago, and they revamped their here in Oregon. They revamped their morning lineup. They got like 5 hours of Morning Edition, and they have John Hockenberry's show from New York, which is pushes the boundaries a little bit, and that's on for an hour, and then they have a couple hours of the show from Boston, Here and There, or
Here and Now,
yeah. Hither and Dither.
Then there's another one called The Takeaway. That's the one that
Hockenberry
does. He hosts that, and I know Hockenberry from the first Intifada. Actually, we were both in Palestine, covering the first Intifada in the late 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are all of these package programs coming out of NPR, including Marketplace, which is a straight out, celebration of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid that anyone would say anything critical about the system. They'll find rotten apples like Bernie Madoff you know, and Robert Cohen and go off on them about how terrible they are, and, you know, they stole the money from grandmothers and have pauperized, you know, poor people. But they never talk about the system that produces those apples, the barrel. That's off limits.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot even be broached. You cannot. There's not even a whiff of criticism of the system. It's just about, you know, someone who is cheating, someone who is, you know, ripping people off and is engaging, you know, in all kinds of, you know, malpractice and deceptive tactics. So I think, you know, Marketplace has really symbolized what, in many ways, what NPR, what public radio has become. You know, I think they should give Richard Wolff a full hour, you mm-hmm. know, to talk about economics as it really is, not the fantasies that are spun out on Morning Edition or All Things Considered or Marketplace.
Well, you know, all these different shows on NPR, they also, they sort of have the same guests. You know, people from the think tanks, people from the Washington Consensus.
Well, there is a golden Rolodex mm-hmm. of, you know, approved mm-hmm. speakers. They're looking for people who can speak concisely, mm-hmm. Who will not make waves, who will stay within a certain predictable parameter, and will not offend anyone. So that's their golden Rolodex. And yes, the Washington think tanks and former government officials and present government officials like Ashton Carter this morning, the Secretary of Defense, they are privileged over everybody else. So, you know, rarely, if ever, do you hear voices from the Occupy movement or Black Lives movement or any of the other movements that are going on in this country.
Well, it's interesting. Just yesterday, I got an email survey from NPR. Asking if I listen to Morning Edition, and so I told them, you know, that I'd give them a lot better rating if they'd have Noam Chomsky on now and then, but they, we'll see if that ever happens. But they just happened to send out this survey, and they asked about a lot of questions about underwriting and do I feel that it's intrusive and whatnot, which I do. And
well, as mm-hmm. I said, it's in violation of the Public Broadcasting Act.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
so technically, it's not called a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
It's called underwriting, and then they had another category called enhanced underwriting.
Oh, wow!
So initially, when they started doing this, as funds from Congress were cut, and the political attack was ramped up in the 1980s during the Reagan years, when NPR was denounced as Managua on the Potomac, which is kind of pretty funny if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some unintended irony there. As, you know, was NPR actually supporting the Sandinista government in Nicaragua? I don't think so. But be that as it may, the funding has been cut. But initially, these announcements were, this program is brought to you by ExxonMobil, okay? Then, with enhanced underwriting, this program is brought to you by ExxonMobil, which is dedicated to a clean and healthy environment. It has taken many steps to promote ecology and making qualified statements about a corporation which has probably done more to accelerate climate change and global warming than any other corporation in the world.
Who is in charge of NPR right now? They've gone through quite a few people, haven't they?
Well, you know, the leadership at the top, you know, of course, keeps changing, but it doesn't alter the fundamental trajectory mm-hmm. of the news, the content of the news. They've locked themselves into a very narrow box, and they're very fearful and timid of breaking out of that box by inviting voices that you don't hear. Instead of going to the Golden Rolodex and the same old experts from the American Enterprise Institute and the Brookings Institution and the Heritage Foundation and all these other Washington think tanks, they should go out to local organizations on the ground where people are actually contesting the hegemonic thinking, as you mentioned, the Washington Consensus and neoliberalism. which is, you know, has generated an enormous amount of destruction, not only in the United States but around the world, and that's going to take off even more if the Trans-Pacific Partnership is passed.
Well, the reason I asked about the people at the top, I think one of their presidents or whatever was had come over from Radio Free Europe, or
yeah, that's right. And mm-hmm. also, a longtime president was Frank Mankiewicz, mm-hmm. who used to work for Robert Kennedy. So there is a link there between state and NPR.
Well, alternative radio was here to remedy all that. How did alternative radio get started?
Well,
30 years ago.
I was really frustrated with what I heard on public radio, and I wanted to get these voices that, AR features on a regular basis out there to a larger listening audience. And so I just started, it was total serendipity. Part of it was there was a community radio station here in Boulder, KGNU, that allowed me to start, doing programs and learning how to edit and do interviews and announcements and writing and all of that. All that goes into a particular broadcast. And so starting on a whim, I put up these programs, incidentally, with Chomsky. They were carried by a few Pacifica stations, but the response was just incredible. It was so over the top that I decided I could keep going doing this. And so, we've expanded. We're on about 200 stations, although not in Eugene, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately in Portland and the Gorge and further out east where you broadcast, further out west, I'm sorry. And so all over Canada, Australia as well.
Really?
It's curious. It's been a kind of adventure, and it's not easy work to be in this area, as you know, because there is, the forces, the economic forces, the political forces, the ideological forces, are significant, and you're not going to hear voices like Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz or Henry Giroux or Stephen Salida or Loretta Napoleoni or Tim Flannery. These are just some of the people I've had on recently, Deepa Kumar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are just, great voices from the U.S. and from around the world, also from Canada. David Suzuki has been a guest a number of times. Naomi Klein, Elaine Bernard, and other Canadians. So we try and, internationalize the program quite a bit. Tariq Ali is from Pakistan, Arundhati Roy and Vandana Shivar from India. And there is an audience, and the thing is to persevere, to not give up, to don't give in to despair and negativity.
How do you get a lot of the lectures that you present have been from other cities? How do you line those up?
Yes, well, obviously, whoever comes to Denver and Boulder, we record here. For mm-hmm. example, John Kiriakou, the CIA whistleblower who was imprisoned by the Nobel Peace Prize winning constitutional lawyer President Barack Obama. He's going to be speaking here in a few days, so we'll record that. But yes, I have a network of people around the country who, give us a call or shoot us an email and say, so-and-so, Naomi Klein is speaking in Seattle. Do you want me to record her? So we've built up a coterie of recording talent, if I could use that word, around the U.S. and Canada as well. There's a talk coming up in Vancouver with a very important voice on Islam, Omid Saifi. That we're going to record that. So it's created a network of recording engineers around the country and in Canada as well.
Mm. Have you ever recorded Well, he's sort of traveling around. I think of Pepe Escobar. He's around the world, but like Stephen Cohen, you never hear him on NPR. You should. He is on this. John Chancellor has a kind of a syndicated. It's an internet interview, and he interviews him every week or something like that.
Really? Is it John Chancellor or Dan Rather?
No, John Chancellor has this. It's an internet show, and he has a regular sort of a half-hour chat with Stephen Cohen, who...
Yeah, well, I can think of no better expert on Russia and Russian politics than Stephen Cohen. Actually, I've tried to get him on, but for one reason or another, it hasn't worked out, but he's very much on my radar. So that's also how we, you know, create programs. People tell us, well, there's this person who's really good on Islamophobia. She teaches at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Why don't you get her on? And so that's how that happens.
Well, then I think another person is Ellen Brown, who's she's written a lot on public banks.
And indeed. Yeah, no, there's no dearth of independent voices out there. It's simply a question of tracking them down and then getting good audio. That's always a hurdle. Because it has to be broadcast quality. We're beyond the days of, you know, cassettes and noisy tapes.
Oh, yes, a little tape that you could cut, that will splice them and cut them.
Right.
Well, this is Political Perspectives. I'm Per Fagerang, normally the host of Fight the Empire. But today my guest is David Barsamian, who we all know from alternative radio, which has been on the air for 30 years now, and fighting the good fight, telling you, like Teresa Mitchell says, the news you're not supposed to know, the things that don't get on NPR and... And heaven knows on Fox TV or whatever, or CNN. That's, but
well, I urge people to help alternative radio. Go to the website alternativeradio.org. Sign the petition to get KLCC to reverse its dropping of alternative radio. Just go to change.org and type in KLCC in the search bar. And you can sign the petition. This is something really practical. A couple hundred people have already signed it. If they hear from enough people, maybe we can reverse their decision.
Well, you know what? I think the reason they don't, why alternative radio is not on NPR, because NPR ignores so many of the issues that you play up on your show, and the one that comes to mind most of all is the whole issue of Kashmir, which has been really totally forgotten on mainstream radio, but it's sort of at the root of so much terrorism going on in the world today. Can you tell us a little bit of the whole issue of Kashmir is all about? Because most people don't know much about it.
Well, in Kashmir is a region in the Himalayas, in northwest India and what is now Pakistan. When India was divided by the British imperialists in 1947, Kashmir into two countries, largely Hindu India and largely Muslim Pakistan, the issue of Kashmir was unresolved. It had a Hindu Maharaja, that is to say the king was a Hindu, but the population was overwhelmingly Muslim. There was huge controversy at the time about should the Indian government annex Kashmir, because the Maharaja, who was a Hindu, Hari Singh, he signed a letter of accession to India, that Kashmir should be part of India. But unfortunately, he never talked to his citizenry, which is what tyrants never do. Autocrats never talk to the people or to try and even fulfill the desires of their people. And so a war broke out then between India and Pakistan. It has been the site of a couple of major wars, many skirmishes, There have been huge human rights violations. Kashmir is the most densely militarized zone on the face of the earth. There are about 700,000 Indian security forces in this area, which is much smaller than the state of Oregon, by the way. 40,000 Kashmiris have been detained, tortured. 80,000 have been killed. It's a massive human rights catastrophe that has just dropped under the radar. And because I paid a lot of attention to it, doing interviews and giving lectures, I've been banned from India. I haven't been there in the last 5 years. So the world's largest democracy is, afraid of me and won't let me in the country. But it continues till this day. You'll read, in the usually in the back pages of the New York Times or the Oregonian, if it even reaches that level, that there was a firefight and some militants were killed. Of course, from the Indian government perspective, anyone who resists Indian rule is by definition a terrorist,
mm-hmm.
and an Islamic terrorist. And a Pakistani jihadist. They've reduced the discourse to that kind of thing. And then the American news media falls right into step. Oh, these are more, militant Muslims, jihadists, fundamentalists. We know who they are.
Wasn't there supposed to have been a plebiscite back in the late 40s?
Yes. Nehru, who was the first prime minister of India, who himself was of Kashmiri origin, by the way, promised on a number of occasions that the desires of the Kashmiri people will be available through a plebiscite. But, very much like what's happened in other parts of the world, delay, delay, delay. And then there was a kind of like a fait accompli, and then in 1952, the Indian constitution was changed, and Kashmir became part of India, officially part of India. So yes, they totally reneged on that pledge of a plebiscite.
Well, you could say because the people were never given the opportunity to vote, some of them have turned to violence, which India calls terrorism. And I think that's at the root of that big attack a few years ago in Bombay, where, real-life terrorists got in there and killed a lot of people. But I think that was the root of their grievance.
Well, that was a little bit different, Per. That mm-hmm. was actually involving Pakistani jihadists.
Oh, okay.
See, the Kashmiris that I've spoken to are not very excited about Pakistan. They were excited in 1947 when this new state was created. But, they have access to the media, too, and they know what's been going on in Pakistan. It's basically a failed state. It's run by the military. It's extremely corrupt. It's one of the most violent countries in the world. And so Kashmiris see this, and my take on this is that if there were a plebiscite today, most Kashmiris would vote for independence
mm-hmm.
and not some kind of unification with Pakistan.
Well, yes.
But, Kashmir has major strategic importance for mm-hmm. India. It is the source of the great rivers of India. And so downstream, that's the fruit of the Himalayas. Of course, with global warming, the glaciers are shrinking. The runoff is less and less every year. Parts of India and Pakistan are in extreme drought. But nevertheless, the rivers are the huge geostrategic, jewel in this conflict. So you have to see it as there's a tripod here. There's the Indian state, there's the Pakistani state, and then there's the Kashmiri people.
Mm-hmm.
So I see three separate entities.
Well, we are talking to David Barsamian of Alternative Radio. We're talking about Alternative Radio. We're talking about NPR. We're talking about the issues that get ignored. A whole lot of stuff. And if listeners want to chip in, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Well, what are some of the, one of the other big issues going on right now is Syria. you know, this ongoing war in Syria, which well, I have to say that the mainstream coverage has been really pretty terrible. How do you see the situation there?
Well, it's heartbreaking. I mean, on a personal level, I've been to Syria. I have, you know, dear friends there. And so to see what's happened in terms of the 250,000 dead, 11 million people displaced, that's half the population of the country, is no longer, they're no longer living in their homes. There's about 6 million internal refugees, about 5 million who are in camps in Lebanon, in Turkey, in Jordan, and many of them, you know, so despairing of the situation and the level of violence, you know, have literally walked into Europe, making that very dangerous trek across the Aegean from Turkey to Greece. Now, the uprising in Syria began in March of 2011 in the southern part of the country, and it was a peaceful uprising. However, Bashar al-Assad, the president of the country and the son of the former dictator, the Assad family has been running Syria for the last 40 years, he responded to peaceful demonstrations with violence. And initially, there was no response, there was no violent response, but, excuse me, if you can't hear, I've got a terrible cold.
Mm.
Now, so Assad brought the army down on the heads of these people, peaceful protesters, and the movement grew, and then Obama made the you know, incredible announcement that Assad must go. Can you imagine if, you know, the president of the Ivory Coast or the prime minister of New Zealand announced that Obama must go? You know, what the response might be?
Mm-hmm.
It just shows you the arrogance and the imperial attitude of whoever is sitting in the Oval Office. This is not just about Obama. It's about American imperialism. So they tried to, you know, find moderates in Syria to arm. Unfortunately, most of those moderates were killed by the Assad regime. And so the U.S. was left with a whole potpourri of jihadist fundamentalist groups to deal with. And it is in this vacuum, it is in this situation that was actually triggered by the U.S. and U.S.-UK invasion of Iraq, in neighboring Iraq in 2003, that led to the creation of ISIS. And we see today the disastrous results of the intervention of the policy. And, you know, Ashton Carter this morning on Morning Edition was talking about, you know, there'll be more U.S. advisors and more, you know, more attacks and mm-hmm. more drone strikes and the like. It's not going to address the root problems of inequality and autocracy, which is rampant in the region. I mean, just talking about Syria, look at Libya, completely collapsed state.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing in Yemen. You know, I think I've never in my lifetime seen the Middle East, and my parents are from there. I've traveled there quite a bit. I've never seen the region in such chaos and peril. It's really breathtaking.
Well, you know, if you go back in time, back in 1949, the CIA was involved in a coup in Syria. This one president was overthrown, and another one was put in his place. And one of the reasons for that was that the fellow who was overthrown, his name was, let's see if I got it here, Shukri al-Kuatli. He was accused of, not being tough on the communists. And the big thing then was he was opposed to what they call the TAP line. This is the pipeline going from, from the Gulf, Persian Gulf, through Syria and to Europe. Or to Turkey. I think originally it was supposed to go to Israel, but then the the pipeline is sort of fell into disuse, and now they're trying to resurrect it. And that's partly one of the reasons why you have this war in Syria. So the U.S.
war is also fueled by the most extreme, most fundamentalist regime in the world, Saudi Arabia, close U.S. ally. They have been funding the jihadis. They've been paying for weapons and training and the like. And Syria has become this kind of a proxy war zone, you know, where Russia has intervened, the U.S. is intervening, the French, the British, Iran, Hezbollah from Lebanon, and the Assad regime.
Well, I'm hearing about the Russian intervention seems to have changed the situation quite a bit. The Assad forces are kind of gaining ground, and there is, I think, is supposed to actually convene today. There's supposed to be a conference on Syria.
Yes, in Geneva, but there's some question as to who will attend and who will allow, who will be allowed to attend. Now, for example, the Turkish government has announced that they will not attend if Syrian Kurds are at the table, because they're totally against any kind of representation, political representation from the Kurdish people, whether it be inside of Turkey, which has the largest Kurdish population in the world, or from inside of Syria. Along the Turkish border in the north of Syria, there's an area that has been carved out by the Kurds called Rojava. They also have a kind of autonomous area in Iraq with its capital of Erbil and the cities of Sulaymaniyah. And so the Turks are blocking any kind of move by the Kurdish people to finally achieve some kind of independent state. This was something that was promised to the Kurds and the Armenians, incidentally, at the end of World War One. It never happened. The Kurds today constitute the largest population in the world that does not have an independent state. There are Kurds in Iraq, in Turkey, where it's the largest number, Syria, and also in Iran.
Well, if people want to call in, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Trying to gather my thoughts here. You know, the Russian intervention was apparently it got the U.S. a little more involved. The Russians claim that Turkey, you talk about Turkey, is that they are buying this oil that the Islamic State has been selling on the black market. Apparently, Erdogan's son is involved in that.
The Turkish journalists who reported that story are facing life imprisonment. He's an editor at Cumhuriyet, a Turkish language newspaper. He and another journalist have been documenting this whole story. The regime of Erdogan, which is in power in Ankara, a close U.S. ally, a member of NATO, and all of that, has become increasingly autocratic and tyrannical. And so, you know, we need to look at who our real friends are and who these other states, what they're doing. I mentioned Saudi Arabia. Turkey is another example.
Well, you know, what about Erdogan? He seems to be a very unstable, shifty character. At one time, he was talking about having no problems with anybody. He wanted to, he sort of presented himself as a peacemaker and everything. And I don't know, what happened to him?
Well, I think increasingly, you know, as you stay in power, as that old adage goes, you know, power corrupts and corrupts absolutely. And that's what's happened as he's accrued more and more power. He's become increasingly intolerant of any dissident voices. I mean, I personally know journalists like Ambarin Zaman, who was publicly denounced by Erdogan. He names these people in public. Hrant Dink was named in public, and he was the Turkish-Armenian journalist who was assassinated in Istanbul in broad daylight on the 19th of January 2007, a very distinguished editor, mm-hmm. and someone who was advocating reconciliation between Turks and Armenians. So the situation in Turkey among the in the political leadership of the AKP, the AKP party, that's the Justice and Development Party, it has become increasingly a tool for this what he has been called in Turkey. They call him the new sultan, the new mm-hmm. sultan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's becoming more and more dictatorial.
Wow. Well, we got a caller on the line. Let's go to our caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for letting me in. And, mm-hmm. and this is a great discussion. I personally have been emailing Eve Epstein and OPB about bringing alternative radio back, and always noting that KBOO is the place that seems to set the template, and then OPB dips its toes in that in that water. They've recently begun, I think, that they've never done investigative journalism in-house. They've always jobbed it out, and now they're jobbing it out to the Center for
Investigative Reporting.
Right, right, and they're doing this Reveal program. But compared to the speakers list on alternative radio, the point I wanted to make is that the corporatization of NPR and PBS has had a knock-on effect. It's made the commercial stations all the more irresponsible. So that now we have presidential debates that are corporate sponsored. I mean, there used to be this modicum of it wasn't going to be commodified, presidential debates, and they have been commodified. And the loss to the public is that issues like the trade deal, the TPP. The candidates themselves don't want to discuss it because, you see, the GOP candidates make a lot of hay with the know-nothings, their base, by bashing liberals and Obama. However, very interesting that no one has asked any of the GOP candidates why is it that they endorsed Obama's 2012 trade deal, the Corus FTA, and why is it that they are on board supporting another secretly negotiated trade deal that would surrender sovereignty from all the states that sign it. And that's, you know, the bedrock issue of the far right is never surrender sovereignty from the locality. And yet they are all on board, and no one is even asking them the question. In the end of this month, Congress is supposed to vote up or down. And they've never had to go on the record. And I can't understand why Bernie Sanders hasn't raised the question since moderators aren't asking him and Hillary about it either.
Well, in Sanders' defense, I believe he has spoken out against the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
In the debates, they've taken the opportunity of all this time to educate the American people about the TPP. I haven't seen Bernie Sanders do that on the debates, no.
But I think in other speeches he has mentioned it.
Well, what accounts for the silence during the debates?
Well, I think they're responding to, you know, because the journalists, the anchors that are asking the questions, avoid the issue. I think that's the explanation.
Yeah, well,
but certainly Sanders could inject it. You don't have to wait for a question.
It is astonishing to me. It's one of the many things, you know, along when I do take the time to write comments and most of the articles under Yahoo's news aggregate or Google's news aggregate are taken over by trolls, but no one on the left seems to want to take the time to get in there and try and be reasonable, and I've sort of taken that on upon myself since I can't find paying work. And it feels at least rewarding to put a little bit of sanity in those comment sections. And the point I always make about OPB is that They have multiple daily and weekly programs like Marketplace, as you guys mentioned. They have Planet Money. I grew up when they had Louis Rukeyser doing This Week on Wall Street.
He was horrible.
And, you know, and the fact of the matter is it's so glaring that they've never had a program from the perspective of labor. And Studs Terkel is dead. He always used to hammer away at NPR about not having a program from the perspective of labor. And there's no one else carrying that ball anymore. And it's just really sad that there's so little focus among the people who have been disenfranchised. There's so little focus to go after this tactically and not ask, but demand for part of their airwave spectrum back.
Okay, well, thanks for that call. I think we've got another caller on the line. So thanks for
Thank
calling.
You.
Anita's on the line. Morning.
Ah, good morning. I'm a big fan of yours, Mr. Varsamyan. Thank you so much for your program. My question is very brief. It is, what steps do you think the American public should take, those of us who really would like to see our representative democracy continue, stem the tide of some of the problems that you have been highlighting in your program over the last 3 years since I've been here and able to hear your program? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, I'll answer that with a comment from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice. She was asked fairly recently about if you were to start a new country, what would be the first step you would take? And she said, "I would never start any country with the United States Constitution." So, we believe that there is a democracy here, but is it in fact representative of the people, or is it responsive to corporate interests and groups represented, for example, by the Koch brothers? Jane Mayer of the New Yorker magazine has done some yeoman investigative reporting exposing the enormous influence that the Koch brothers have on the political process. I think, you know, democracy is it's still gasping for air. It's not quite out of oxygen, but it's definitely in the ICU. In fact, there was a headline, there was a recent Princeton study, I don't know if you heard about it or not, it was printed in the New York Times, and the headline was, U.S. no longer a democracy. And I think more and more people are realizing that, you know, that they have these charades every 4 years, which, you know, turn into auctions for the highest bidder, whoever can raise enough money from corporate and private interests. And people are supposed to vote for this and this or that candidate and then go home and disappear and you know, not be active at all. You know, I think Sanders does represent, at least on the economic issues, some decency. You know, he's basically a New Deal liberal, mm-hmm. an old-fashioned 1930s FDR liberal. He calls himself a democratic socialist, but I don't believe he's advocating for worker control of the means of production, which is a kind of classic definition of socialism. But he is addressing very eloquently, with great articulation, how Wall Street and the big banks have basically dominated the system and have enriched a small sliver of the population while pauperizing a great number of people. So I think we've got to we need publicly funded elections mm-hmm. To start with. That seems to be a fundamental thing. We just can't have this, you know, highest bidder, richest person is able to, you know, write a check and if it's Sheldon Adelson or the Koch brothers or the Scave Foundation or the Heritage Foundation, I mean, the right wing has a lot of money, and they've deployed that money. I mean, this goes back to the 1970s when The Powell memorandum was written, not Colin Powell, but another Powell, who later became a Lewis Powell, who became a Supreme Court justice under Nixon. He said, you know, capitalism is under attack in this country. There are all kinds of groups. The American way of life, as the chambers of commerce define it, is under threat, and we need to fight back. And that's when you have the first organized think tanks, and media was a big part of this. They identified media as a crucial aspect of this to roll back the activism and the activists of the 1960s and early 1970s, when there was, you know, tremendous movement in this country and demand for social change.
They have
largely succeeded in neutralizing the Democratic Party. The working class and labor unions have been smashed. And, you know, it's a situation that requires, I think, clarity. It requires honesty.
Mm-hmm. Hey, David?
Yes.
We have another caller. I think we have a caller from Eugene.
Okay.
Unless you're on the air.
Hi, David. It's so good to hear your voice. This is Matt Laubach in Eugene. And
hey, Matt. Good morning.
I was hoping you'd talk more about the campaign to get you on the air.
Because yes, I did actually in the beginning, but I'll definitely mention it again.
Well, I just don't like the way that they took you off the air. First of all, they didn't tell you anything about it. There was only a notification buried down deep in the menus on their website that they had decided to take you off the air. And it was just very unfair the way that they did it.
Well, thank you for your concern and your comments. It was rather unprofessional. You know, I heard about it secondhand. I mean, this is a program that has a lot of listeners. That, according to the Eugene Weekly, it was a very popular program. In an article, they wrote about it, and it was summarily removed from the air without any notice, really, to me. And so there is a petition. As I've mentioned, you can go to change.org, and type KLCC in the search bar, and that'll take you to that petition, and I hope you can sign it. And perhaps we can reverse this very distressing decision by KLCC, particularly in light of the fact that they repeat three kind of mainstream programs, one of which is just a game show, Wait, Don't Tell Me. They repeat that, so 2 hours of that, 2 hours of TED Hour, 2 hours of Radio Lab. The people that appear on TED are very mainstream. There's none of the voices that you hear on alternative radio, like Osei Fuseku or Ali Abu Nima or Katha Pollitt. These are just, you know, some of the voices that we get on a regular basis never seem to appear on the TED Hour, because it's very establishment oriented. So it's important that people be active, stay active, and work on getting AR back on the air. Go to alternativeradio.org if you want to have more information about what we're doing.
Would it help to call KLCC on the telephone?
Sure.
I don't have their phone number handy, but I'm sure people could find it out.
It's 541.
Mm-hmm.
463-6003.
Wow.
And the person to talk to is Don Hine. You can also reach him at HEIND at lanecc.edu.
So what's that phone number again? 541?
541-463-6003. And the thing is, the KLCC's signal is so huge. It covers all of West Central Oregon. I mean, they have 81,000 watt signal, and they have five transmitters. They have one in Bend. They've got one in Newport and Florence and Reedsport and Roseburg. Plus, they have a whole lot of translators around West Central Oregon. So they just cover such a huge footprint.
Is there also an OPB, NPR AM station in Eugene?
Well, yeah, you see, we have, in Eugene, we have six public radio stations.
Wow.
We have, like, KWAX, which broadcasts classical music. Then we have KRVM, which has Jefferson Public Radio, and that's 1280 AM. And then, as you said earlier in the show, KEPB is down in is Eugene, is 1600 AM. Then we have like we get it out of Corvallis too, KOAC 550 AM.
So it's kind of you have everything except alternative radio then.
Right. It's just
I'm afraid we've had it for
so long, and now it's off the air, and they put this show called Reveal on,
mm-hmm.
and as a substitute for alternative radio. I mean,
I'm afraid we're going to have to end it right now. The show is over, but thank you a lot for calling, guys. Some good information there, folks. You can call KLCC if you want, and thank you, David Barsamian. Thanks for being with us, and bringing this to more people's attention.
Thanks, Perrin. I apologize again for having such a bad throat, as it were.
Oh, that's fine. You sound great. So, we just keep
AR. I'll see you in May. I'm going to go on a speaking tour all over Oregon.
Oh, really? Oh, great. Then. Something to look forward to. Thank you very much. This has been Political Perspectives. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia on KBOO, your radio station.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 10:01 a.m. Coming up, we've got...